Imagine being told that there's this breakthrough gene therapy that could potentially save your child's life,
Right.
but to get access to it, you have to enroll them in a clinical trial where there is a 50% chance your child is just going to be given a placebo.
Which is just a devastating reality.
It really is. You basically have to sit there watching the disease progress, knowing they might just be getting salt water, and it's all in the name of, statistical purity.
Yeah, that's exactly the crisis we're looking at today.
Right. And welcome, by the way, to you, the learner. We are so thrilled you're here for this custom deep dive.
Absolutely.
And I have to tell you, the stack of sources you sent us, it was quite the journey to get through. The research process itself actually ended up mirroring the topic
Oh,
perfectly.
it was a total master class in hitting brick walls.
Yeah.
I mean, you think you're just going to click a link and gather the facts, right?
Yeah. But instead, you're just met with this digital labyrinth. I
Yeah.
tried to open the links you provided, like the Endpoints news piece on UNUC or a Street Insider piece on Regeneron, even a White House letter. And I was immediately hit with these 403 errors. Cloudflare security bots were treating my browser like a literal threat.
Yeah, we ran into so many hard paywalls.
Exactly. And then there was that BioSpace article about the FDA leaks. I clicked it, and instead of an article, I got this massive cookie consent declaration.
Oh, right, the one that was thousands of lines long.
Yes, it wasn't just a simple accept all button. It detailed exactly 1,022 advertising partners.
That is just wild.
I mean, Branch Metrics, Criteo, Google, Salesforce, HubSpot, all of them demanding to track my IP address, map my location, and scan my device characteristics in real time.
The juxtaposition there is just incredible, especially once we get into the meat of what those sources actually revealed about how data is handled in other sectors.
Totally. So keep that 1,022 partner cookie wall in the back of your mind because it becomes wildly relevant a bit later.
For sure.
Because despite all those digital roadblocks, the sources that did make it through, like the pieces from Inside Health Policy, Fierce Biotech, the Stop Cancer Fund, and an Audioboom Tech Minute, they revealed an incredibly high stakes battle.
A really agonizing tug of war, honestly.
Exactly. The mission for this deep dive is to unpack this current existential crisis at the FDA. It's this fight between the desperate need for speed and rare disease treatments and the FDA's rigid historical demand for traditional scientific proof.
And if you want to understand just how erratic this tug of war has become, that Fierce Biotech report from June 2026 lays it out perfectly.
Yeah, it really does.
The FDA is basically giving the entire biotech industry regulatory whiplash right now.
Right.
In this massive U-turn, the agency just agreed to reconsider a gene therapy from a company called Regeneron Bio.
Right, the drug is called Nubs Only, right?
Yep, nubs only. And it's designed to treat Hunter syndrome, which is also known as MPS2.
So, just for some context for you listening, Hunter syndrome is an ultra rare inherited childhood disease. It's caused by a missing enzyme, which leads to this abnormal accumulation of sugar molecules in the tissues.
It's brutal.
It is. We are talking about a global patient population of roughly 2,000 people. Only about 500 babies are born with it each year.
Right.
The symptoms usually start around age two, delayed growth, severe cognitive decline. It's fatal and it's absolutely devastating for these families.
Which is exactly what makes the FDA's behavior over the last few months so incredibly controversial.
Right, because they rejected it first.
Exactly. Back in February of 2026, the FDA flat out rejected Nafsunli. They told Regeneron to enroll more patients. And crucially, they demanded an untreated control arm.
Meaning placebos for a fatal disease.
Right. They also rejected the company's novel use of a specific biomarker. It was a measurement of a sugar molecule called heparan sulfate.
Okay, let's unpack the mechanics of that biomarker rejection because that is really where the friction lives here.
Yeah, it's the core of the whole debate.
The logic from the developer side is pretty straightforward. They're saying, hey, this disease is caused by a buildup of heparan sulfate. Our drug clears the heparan sulfate from the blood, therefore, the drug works.
Right, but the FDA historically pushes back on that leap of faith.
Right. They argue that just because you cleared the sugar from the blood, that doesn't necessarily mean the drug actually crossed the blood-brain barrier to stop the cognitive decline.
Exactly. They want to see the actual clinical endpoint. They want to see the child's cognitive function stabilize over a period of years.
But that time gap is the whole issue. Taking a blood test to measure sugar levels takes weeks. Waiting to see if a child's cognitive decline halts takes years.
And the FDA, at least in February, decided they were not willing to rely on that short-term biomarker. They wanted the long-term proof, compared against the group of kids receiving no treatment.
Okay, let's unpack this with an analogy. Because demanding an untreated control arm for an ultra-rare fatal childhood disease where only 500 babies are born a year, it feels a bit like testing a parachute by giving half the passengers a backpack full of rocks.
That's a grim way to put it, but
I mean, it might be scientifically rigorous, but it's ethically agonizing for the families. The sample size is just so small that a single outlier completely skews the data.
Oh, for sure. If you only have 20 kids in a trial, and you give 10 the drug and 10 the placebo, the statistical noise is basically deafening.
Right. If two kids in the drug arm happen to have a slightly milder genetic mutation, the drug looks like a miracle.
And if two kids in the placebo arm have it, the drug looks like a complete failure. The population is simply too small to randomize out those variables.
So that statistical reality, combined with the ethical nightmare of giving dying children placebos, caused the rare disease community to just absolutely erupt.
Which brings us to the sudden pivot in June. Out of nowhere, the FDA completely reversed course.
Wait, they just backed down?
Yep. They announced that the existing clinical data is actually sufficient to support an accelerated approval filing.
Wow.
They dropped the demand for the untreated control arm. They accepted the heparin sulfate biomarker data, and they are expediting the whole review.
That is a massive U-turn.
And it isn't even an isolated incident. They just pulled a very similar U-turn for Uniker's Huntington's disease therapy, backing off earlier demands for a sham control there, too.
So the underlying science of Nuvzinli didn't magically transform between February and June. I mean, the molecule didn't change.
No, the science didn't change at all. What changed was the pressure.
Right. The sources note that this sudden leniency directly followed a June 3rd meeting between rare disease advocates and the acting FDA leadership.
Yeah, that was Kyle Diamantis, Mike Davis, and Kareem Mikhail.
Exactly. And the National MPS Society, they didn't just write a strongly worded letter. They literally staged a mock funeral outside the FDA headquarters.
Which is a pretty intense visual.
Very. They were accusing the agency of playing politics with treatments that science has already proven to be safe.
And that mock funeral really highlights a broader structural demand from these advocates. They don't just want one-off exceptions for specific drugs like Nuvzinli.
Right, they want a fundamental rewrite of the rules.
Exactly. The Inside Health Policy source details this massive effort from April 2026. A group called the Haystack Project, which is backed by over 160 different advocacy groups, submitted a formal petition to the FDA.
And what exactly are they asking for?
They are pushing to amend the Code of Federal Regulations to change how the agency actually defines adequate and well-controlled trials.
Okay, because currently, adequate and well-controlled is heavily synonymous with the traditional RCT, the randomized controlled trial.
Right, and the Haystack petition is arguing that this definition needs to be driven by the context of the specific disease.
Right. A one-size-fits-all RCT model is fundamentally broken when your entire patient population could fit inside a high school gymnasium.
Yeah, Cara Barassi, the CEO of the Haystack Project, makes a really fascinating argument about this. She points out that forcing a common disease trial framework onto a rare disease actually creates false positives and false negatives.
Oh, that's interesting. I mean, a methodology designed for heart disease or diabetes where you have millions of patients just doesn't work for MPS too.
Exactly.
I actually thought her framing on that was brilliant because she is actively pushing back against the idea that rare disease advocates just want lower standards.
Right. It's not about lowering the bar.
No. She argues that tailoring the approach is about aligning the trial with scientific reality. She doesn't want her child, or anyone else's, to take a drug approved under a subpar standard.
She just wants the standard to actually make sense for the mechanics of the disease.
Exactly. Because if a trial fails because the statistical design was flawed for a small population, that false negative means a life-saving cure just gets thrown in the trash.
And all of this scientific debate is happening inside a massive political pressure cooker.
It really is. And just a quick note for you listening. Our goal today is just to map out this landscape exactly as it appears in your sources.
Right. We are strictly remaining impartial here.
Exactly. We are not taking sides or endorsing the viewpoints of any of the political figures or activists mentioned from the left or the right. We're simply conveying the factual political landscape exactly as the source material presents it.
Yep. And that factual landscape shows that FDA Commissioner Marty McGarry is caught in a serious political vice.
The pressure is coming from everywhere.
It really is. Under the Trump administration, McGarry is navigating intense scrutiny from Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s MAHA base, as well as President Donald Trump's MAJ supporters.
Right.
You also have these very vocal right-to-try advocates, like right-wing activist Laura Loomer, demanding that the agency move faster to give patients access to investigational therapies when they have literally no other alternatives.
So it's this perfect storm of grassroots advocacy just colliding with high-level political mandates. But if developers, patient advocates, and all these political figures are aggressively pushing for more flexibility, we have to ask, who exactly is providing the resistance? Who is fighting to keep the traditional rigid standards in place?
To understand that resistance, we need to look at the Stop Cancer Fund source.
Yeah.
And we actually have to look back to May 2025.
Okay, what happened then?
That was when Commissioner Makary appointed Vinay Prasad to lead CBER, that's the FDA's Center for Biologics Evaluation and Research. He replaced Peter Marks.
Ah, okay.
Prasad is a hematologist and oncologist, and he operates with a very different philosophy regarding evidence. He's notorious in the industry for heavily criticizing flexible approvals.
Right. The sources specifically mention his criticism of Sarepta's Elevidys, which is a gene therapy for muscular dystrophy.
Yep. Prasad's stance is essentially that biomarkers and flexible trial designs are absolutely not a substitute for hard clinical outcomes.
Well, David Gorski, a professor of surgery, actually labeled Prasad an evidence-based medicine fundamentalist.
And there is a very strong, principled mechanism behind that fundamentalism.
Yeah.
The mindset is that the RCT is the only tool we have to strip away human bias.
Right. If it isn't a randomized, placebo-controlled, double-blind trial, they feel the data is just too polluted by variables to trust.
Exactly. And Diana Zuckerman, the president of the National Center for Health Research, echoed this exact sentiment.
What's her argument?
Her argument is that flexible approvals often do patients absolutely no favors. If you approve a drug based on a surrogate biomarker, and it turns out the drug doesn't actually stop the disease from progressing, you haven't provided a cure.
You've just provided false hope.
Exactly. You end up with incredibly expensive, potentially toxic drugs that lack proven benefits. Companies make billions off desperate families, while the patients are harmed physically, financially, or both.
It really forces a brutal ethical calculation. I mean, is it worse to deny a patient a potentially life-saving drug because the data is messy and the sample size is small? Or is it worse to approve a useless drug and bankrupt a family because you let your empathy override your scientific rigor?
The FDA, under Prasad, is terrified of the false positive. They're terrified of approving a drug that doesn't work.
But the real-world consequences of this ideological war staggering, particularly on the economic side.
Yeah, the fallout is massive.
Citing Saria Sultan from the Inside Health Policy piece, she pointed out that 84% of biotech investors have decreased, paused, or completely exited rare disease investments due to this regulatory uncertainty.
An 84% drop in investor participation is a literal mass exodus of capital.
And it all comes down to the mechanics of venture capital, right? Investors manage risk. If they fund a drug for hundreds of millions of dollars, they need to know what the finish line looks like.
But right now, they have no idea.
Exactly. Developers don't know if they're going to get the strict Vinay Prasad FDA that demands an RC2 or the lenient June 2026 FDA that accepts a biomarker and drops the control arm.
And because of this whiplash, billions in capital are just lost. Sultan warns that because of this, the U.S. is turning from the unquestioned center of global innovation into what she calls a shrinking plurality.
Wow. Meaning trials and investments are simply moving abroad to countries with clearer rules.
Exactly. And this entirely hinges on how the FDA generates and accepts data. If they can't use a traditional placebo group, why is it so hard to prove a drug works using other methods?
We constantly hear about alternative data models, yet the FDA struggles to implement them.
Which is what brings us right back to that bizarre mix of tech and privacy sources you submitted.
Yes, the juxtaposition of deeply technical pharmaceutical policy alongside an audio boom tech minute and that massive biospace cookie consent wall.
It's so telling.
When you look at how other industries handle data, the FDA's struggle feels almost surreal.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the contrast of industries is just staggering. In the audio boom source, we hear about Chevron and Microsoft building a massive new AI data center in Texas.
Right.
We hear about SoftBank Robotics. We hear about Waymo iterating driverless cars. Literal multi-ton robots navigating complex city streets at lightning speed. They're adjusting their algorithms based on massive influxes of real-world data.
And then you look at that biospace cookie declaration. 1,022 advertising partners. Google, Cradio, HubSpot,
mm-hmm.
they have the technological infrastructure to seamlessly aggregate behavioral profiles across thousands of vendors in milliseconds. They track your IP address, your precise geographical location, what articles you read, how long you linger on a page.
They can instantly process terabytes of data to predict our consumer behaviors with terrifying accuracy.
Right. But look at the medical world. Amy Comstock Rick, an FDA associate director, admits the agency is struggling with what she calls methodological challenges and historical comparability when trying to use patient-centered data.
Let's unpack historical comparability, because that is the major roadblock for something called a synthetic control arm.
Right. In theory, if you have 20 kids in a trial getting a new gene therapy, you shouldn't need a placebo group.
No, you shouldn't.
You should just be able to pull the medical records of 20 kids who had the disease 5 or 10 years ago and compare the new data against the old data.
Exactly. But the FDA looks at those historical records and just sees noise.
Mm-hmm.
How do they know the kids in 2015 were evaluated using the exact same criteria as the kids today?
Right. Were they on different standard of care medications?
Did they have different nutritional support?
Right.
Because the historical data sets weren't perfectly controlled for this specific new trial, the FDA questions the validity of the whole comparison.
It's just wild. The tech industry thrives on messy probabilistic data. I mean, if an algorithm is 95% sure you want to buy those shoes, they show you the ad. If they're wrong, you just ignore the ad.
But at the FDA, truth has historically been absolute. If they are wrong about a gene therapy's efficacy based on messy historical data, people could be permanently injured.
So when they try to match trial participants with external real-world data to create that synthetic control arm, the entire regulatory apparatus just grinds to a halt. I marvel at the paradox here. We have the technology to map the entire digital existence of a billion people to serve them targeted ads, but establishing a plausible mechanism for 2,000 children with a rare disease causes the FDA to freeze.
So what does this all mean for the broader landscape? It means the FDA is currently trapped in a profound identity crisis.
A total tug of war.
Yeah, they're caught between two conflicting mandates. On one side, they must be a strict gatekeeper of absolute scientific truth, protecting patients from false hope.
Right.
On the other side, they're being pressured to be a flexible gateway to life-saving innovation, saving patients from the certainty of having no hope at all.
And for you listening, this isn't just some abstract philosophical debate happening in a vacuum.
Not at all.
This specific regulatory philosophy directly dictates whether billions of dollars flow into the cures of tomorrow, or if those cures die in regulatory limbo while frustrated investors flee the market.
The whiplash we just saw with Rick and NextBio and Unicor is a glaring symptom of an agency that just hasn't figured out its own rules for the 21st century.
The science is advancing faster than the statistical models used to measure it.
Exactly.
Which brings me right back to that 1,022 partner cookie wall. Think about the sheer processing power, the incredibly sophisticated real-time data tracking that went into generating that one annoying pop-up on a website.
It's immense.
It really is. And it leaves us with a lingering question for you to mull over. If our artificial intelligence and real-world data tracking are now sophisticated enough to seamlessly profile and predict our consumer behaviors with terrifying accuracy, why can't we legally harness that exact same real-time data infrastructure to replace the slow, agonizing 20th century placebo-controlled trial?
That is the big question.
What happens to society when medical regulation fundamentally refuses to keep pace with the reality of modern data technology? Maybe the tools to solve the FDA's rare disease crisis are already here. We're just currently using them to sell ads.